not quite as lonely as it used to be.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 49 of Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am your host, Brett Sayer, and with me, as always, is Mike Gianella and Mauricio Rubio. How are you guys doing on the first Monday night of the regular season?
Well, I got Sonny Gray against Adrian Beltre on the TV, so I'm doing really well. Really well.
Yeah, there's baseball on as we're talking into your ears right now, so yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, there's nothing bad about that in the least.
No, not even a little bit.
No weather complaints. No complaints whatsoever.
I forgot what weather was actually. I'm just watching this.
72 degrees today and beautiful for the Phillies to get whomped by the Red Sox. But yeah, it was a nice day for it.
So you're saying it was warm enough for Clay Buchholz to get all sweaty?
Nobody likes that. Nobody likes that image. I don't like it.
All right. Good night. Yeah. Good night, everybody. Drive safe. Man. Oh.
All right. Well. With that image in tow, you can read all of us at baseballperspectus.com. You can find us on Twitter. I am at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. It's Gianella, and Mao is MRubio52. You can reach us as a collective podcast, Flags Fly Forever, at baseballperspectus.com. And we ask that you rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio app. This is one of those interesting times to record a podcast because everyone has now done their drafts. But there's not really all that much relevant data to talk about. So we're... the biggest thing that we are going to discuss today is the first round of fab bidding in expert leagues this past weekend. So we are going to jump right into that, just like we did last season, to start the show. And for that, I am going to kick it out to Mike to start us off.
All right. Well, thanks, Brett. I think we're going to start out with Labor Mixed, which is the league that Brett and I are both doing for the second year in a row. And unlike last year, which our loyal listeners will remember, where we had a significant number of injuries, this year so far we haven't, or at least we weren't before the season, hit with a lot of them. We drafted in mid-February, and we lost a Nard Span to a core muscle injury. And the other injury we had, which kind of was almost trivial, was Jurickson Profar was lost for the season. He was kind of a reserve back end pick, and that was kind of one of the most predictable outcomes ever anyway. So, it left us a spot, but didn't really leave us with a need. So we decided to kind of go two routes. We decided to replace Denard with some speed. And we also decided that since we had taken Wellington Castillo as a second catcher flyer, we hope he gets traded, and it didn't work out, that we just kind of take a catcher. Because there are actually two or three, maybe four, starting catchers floating around out there. So the first guy we tried to get on the speed track was Eric Young. He went for 13. We had the second highest bid at 6. But the consolation prize we wound up with, and Brett, I'll throw this to you a little bit, was Jordan Schaefer, who also went for 6. And I think we talked about this before before the show, and we were putting the bids together. But I think we really like Schaefer. I think Young is certainly good or solid or a little bit better. But I think that Schaefer, you know, at the very least for a month or so, perhaps where it gets exposed, could steal a lot of bags.
Yeah, it's fun when you are choosing between two players who are bad at baseball to pick up in fantasy. But you know, that's what stolen bases as a category does to you. Young is well, when we put in the bids, Young was looking at probably a little bit more playing time and a little bit higher of a floor. But obviously we bidding for Labor Mix was a Saturday night deadline, a one-time Saturday night deadline. And, the Padres, Braves trade was not until Sunday night. So this was pre Cameron Maben acquisition. Obviously, if that had happened beforehand, I think Schaefer would have been our first bid. But yeah, as Mike said, we have Span coming back in hopefully a couple weeks, and we just need a couple of stolen bases to take his place. Schaefer is going to hit at the very bottom of the Twins lineup, but they have no one else to play center field, and he's fast. And other than that, he's bad at baseball. So it's a nice match for our team right now. And you know, it's a shame we had an open spot for him anyway, because our first hitter off the bench was Aaron Hill, who we decided to bench this week, and with the specter of unknown playing time. So that's where we ended up. I think Schaefer can steal us, you know, five bases or so until Span comes back, and that is really all we are looking for.
Mal, do you have anything to add specifically on that? I know it's kind of a weird situation. I mean, these are two, as Brett points out, kind of, you know, I'm trying to think of a way to put it politely, not the best baseball players in real life.
Well, they're going to, I mean, you're getting them strictly for the speed. Like, yeah. It's you're willing to absorb the hit and average, and you know, I guess this is something that we're going to talk about a little bit later. But you know, I think that, you know, these are the types of decisions that you have to make when you're facing roster crunches like that. And I mean, these guys they're not good, but they're going to help you out in a category that you need, and you got to fill those numbers somehow.
Yeah. When you're in a 15-team mixed league, you're not looking at a waiver wire full of guys without warts. You're just trying to pick the ones who have the least, either the least amount of warts or the largest amount of smooth surface.
Yeah, and that's a good segue into our second player. So with Castillo out, we decided to pick up a second catcher. We actually are keeping Castillo on reserve probably for another week or two to see if anything happens with him in terms of a trade or an injury in front of him with the Cubs. But we decided to go with Ryan Hannigan at $2. With the injury there to Christian Vasquez, it looks like Hannigan will be the starter. The club decided not to go with the phenom there and Blake Swihart. So Hannigan should play, as we kind of saw today. It's a really good lineup. I don't think Hannigan's anything special, but he should get some runs and, in particular, some RBI opportunities. The other guy we're looking at was Francisco Cervelli. Interestingly enough, Cervelli wasn't even taken. But I think, as you'll see in the write-up by the time you listen to this, you know, Hannigan, the park and the lineup, I think, kind of, particularly the park, kind of swayed it for us.
Yeah, the park and the lineup are really the big things in his favor. You know, the Red Sox lineup is so incredibly strong, one through eight, that Hannigan really doesn't have to do much to contribute some counting stats at the bottom there. So it's he's a guy who won't really hurt you in batting average. At least he shouldn't, and he'll keep the seat warm until Beef is traded.
Beef.
Yeah, I think we're all friends of Beef on the podcast. We all seem to have our varying degrees of like of him.
Well, he came up Yeah, he came up with some high expectations placed on the bat, and you know someone's probably going to be willing to take a chance on that. They're going to be able to pull something out of it. So,
well, the thing I keep seeing is the teams that might trade for a catcher, I think with the exception of the Padres, who was linked to for about 5 seconds, all seem to be in hitting environments. So that's kind of what we're hoping for.
Right. I mean, you know, defensively, he's not. You know, he's not the best, but he's not going to kill you back there. So, I mean, he'll help a team. He's got value.
Yeah. So I don't know. Is there anybody? Well, there's one guy that we have to talk about that we didn't bid on and who was bid up, and that was Archie Bradley. So Archie Bradley, who wasn't taken in the labor mix when they drafted, like back in, you know, I don't remember the date, but it was like mid February. Probably episode 44 or whatever on the podcast that we, you know, track with like chalk on the wall here. Bradley went for 34. The next highest bid was 10. And labor's a league where what you bid is what you pay. So my feeling about Bradley is I think he could be solid, and I think down the line he could be really solid. But that just seems like a big price to pay in mix, particularly because so many pitchers, even in a 15-team league, come over the transom. And I think even that there's some guys this week that came out, you know, and I think, Brett, I'll throw it to you to talk about some of these guys if you want, that at the prices they went for, I just like better.
Yeah, I'll be honest. If we were going to bid on a pitcher, I might have had Zach McAllister higher on my bid list than Archie Bradley. And that might seem crazy. And I actually do still like Bradley a lot. I'm still surprised he's going to be in the rotation. I don't think he's truly ready to be a fantasy producer at the mixed league level. And the other issue is that even if he's pretty good, the team in Arizona is bad. I mean, the defense is going to be rough behind him. They're not going to win many games. It's not going to be an equation that adds up to him having a ton of value, as opposed to a guy like McAllister, who, you know, his obviously his stuff isn't as good as Bradley's, but it's not shabby, and he's got a better team around him, better opportunities contextually.
I you know, the thing about McAllister that's kind of interesting is, you know, I was listening to the ESPN Fantasy Focus podcast, and they were pointing out that the velocity McAllister picked up in the bullpen at the end of last year, he was maintaining that velocity in spring training. Now, you know, we're not talking about starts and something goes deep, but that's kind of the thing that jumps out with McAllister. I think that if he can pick up some of that velo, you know, he's not going to be crazy good, but yeah, I think he could be a solid, like, mid-tier guy.
To shift the focus back onto Bradley for a little bit, you know, we were talking about this a little bit pre-show, Mike, that, you know, you had asked me what would you put on Bradley in an NL only, and the prices that I gave out was probably about 30 to 40 bucks. I wasn't too sure about it, you know, because it's such a weird situation. But, you know, this is really an NL. This is an only price that went out into a mixed format, and I think the rest of the bids kind of show that. I mean, it's, you know, I get it. I get getting excited about a guy like Bradley, but I think in mix, it might be a little bit too high.
Yeah, there's no question that he's an exciting pitcher. So I understand the excitement. I don't think the theory is all that strong behind the bid. That's all.
No, and you know, I guess that's the other part of it too, is in a keeper league, sometimes there's the, you know, the strategy where you're trying to sabotage other teams by bidding somebody over the keeper price, but you don't even really have that here. So, yeah, there's not really a lot of, like, you know, I'm just looking at some of the arms here, you know, and Brett, I guess the other side thing before we leave mixed is that, you know, was there anybody here, you know, we have the guys we have, like, was there anybody here that you look at in hindsight, like, let's say Brandon Morrow for 3, I'm trying to see, well, McAllister, you mentioned, he's a little expensive, but Raisel Iglesias at 10. Was there anybody here you look at and think, oh, gee, maybe we should have been on one of those guys, like, to, you know, even just to stick on our bench?
I was really surprised that Jace Peterson only went for $1. That might have been the most surprising. That might have been the most surprising thing for me, just because I had him valued sort of right behind that first wave of guys we were looking at, and you had guys like Ryan Rua and Michael Taylor who went for $4 a piece, and I think those are good prices. But there's no reason why Peterson shouldn't be in that $4 to $6 range in a mixed league. I don't know who got Peterson, but that seems like a bit of a steal there for a buck.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, even, you know, at a buck, even if he winds up not hitting and gets optioned or loses the job to Alberto Kiospo, it's a buck.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's no downside there. Do we want to move on to tout NL, or do you guys have any other observations on mixed?
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say I do want to talk for just a minute about Brandon Morrow, because I think he's really, really interesting right now, because he's not really being valued the way that I thought he would be valued. He's the kind of guy who you think if he's healthy, people are going to kind of go back to being gaga over him, and it really hasn't happened. I'm not entirely sure why there's more restraint than I thought there was going to be. Just because if I needed a pitcher in the short term, I certainly would have outbid the $3 bid here. And it looks like they were the team that got him was the only team that bid for him.
Yeah, nobody else bid is even more surprising.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing too, like. Labor compared to touts, you know, so labor has had, you know, and it's a little bit different in the mono leagues, but labor mix has had almost a 6-week layoff. So while in a league that just had an auction like Tout Wars, which was like March, you know, like 20th, 21st, 22nd were those dates. And you're like, yeah, I get it. You know, it's been a week and change. You're not going to like, you know, revamp your team unless you have a ton of injuries. It's just weird in labor with so much of a lapse that there wasn't more going on, especially because Steve Gardner allows people to put people on the disabled list if it's obvious they're injured, but they're not officially on the disabled list. So, yeah, I'm a little surprised that there wasn't, not just with Morrow, but in general, I'm a little surprised that there wasn't more aggressive, not in terms of the total amount of the bid, but just more aggressive like on the quantity of people bid upon.
Agreed. And he went for the same price that Jesse Chavez went for, and
yeah, that's a weird bid.
Yeah, I mean, I like Chavez, but he's just not in the rotation.
No, I mean, it's funny because I was polite about it in the article, but if I'm not quite as polite about it, he's just somebody. If you really want him, you throw a dollar on. You don't even need to go 2 or 3.
No,
and you know, labor has no $0 bid, so it's not exactly like you're going to be able to like use that later.
Oh, that's the devil. No $0 bids. I forgot about that.
Yeah, it really is. And no waivers either, so it's not like you can, you know, pick people out.
Man, you got to save some money in that league, man.
Yeah, we learned that last year. Well, and the thing too is if you have that year, we had it last year, and early on, Jake Seeley of Roto Experts is having, if you have a lot of injuries or guys optioned, it puts you in a bad position early.
Yeah, it really does. So let's talk about the NL a little bit. Mike, this is you're in this one. You're in tout NL. And we don't really need to go back into Bradley. I think we hit on him. He went for $44. I think that is a pretty reasonable bid. It's probably a little bit higher than I would have gone. I think it was about $10 or so dollars higher than you went.
Yeah, let me, you know, instead of talking about Bradley, just because this is the way I decided to write about this and I think what we're trying to do for our readers, let me talk more about like process. So in tout, I took, you know, Hyungjin Ryu like the day or hours before the bad injury news with him, because going into the auction, it was like, oh, he's going to play catch. He might be okay, or it looks like he'll be okay. And then it's like, yeah, he played catch and doesn't feel good. So I was looking to get a pitcher, but I also, I have guys that I'm kind of going to stream. It just happened this week. I've got Travis Wood in Colorado, and I had Tyler Matzek in Colorado. It's like, yeah, these aren't really the guys that you want to stream. So I was trying to pick up a pitcher, but it, you know, as we go through this list, I didn't feel like I had to get a starting pitcher. But Bradley was a guy I bid 30 on, so I'm like, you know what, 30 for Bradley, like 3/10 of my budget, that's realistic. The guy I really wanted, I thought I'd get with this bid, was Trevor Cahill at 20. I thought 20 for Cahill, given the year he had last year, was pretty aggressive. And as I was saying before, Vickery and Tout, if the next highest bid, for example, is 10, that means I'd get Cahill for 11. So that's kind of what I was looking at. And, you know, Cahill went for 27. The highest bid was 32. It was scaled back to 27 with the Vickery. That really surprised me. So, you know, that's kind of what happened. There were two teams. Well, there were three teams out there that kind of need pitching. There's Peter Kreutzer, whose staff, he didn't spend much on it. Already looks kind of jumbled. There was Phil Hertz of Baseball HQ, who I think has like three healthy starters. Right now he's got Garrett Cole, Shelby Miller, and John Neese. And like a lot of guys are either hurt that he drafted hurt or question marks. And then you have Brian Walton, the Masters ball, who not quite as bad, but also needed a starter. So there were some people in the league who were kind of making some heavy bids out of need. And there were some people just sitting back, not making bids at all.
Yeah. It's certainly easy to fall into a spot like that after the draft, and it really doesn't take very long to for something like that to materialize. And you know, spending Fab early, you know, there are certainly times where there's certainly high profile times where it goes awry, but there are also plenty of times where it works out really nicely. I mean, you get these guys for the full 6 months, and that makes a difference if you're selectively aggressive.
Yeah, I covered this for Baseball Prospectus in one of my first articles, which was in 2013, and that was what I discovered. And actually, what's interesting is the reason I wrote that article is because Chris Liss of RotoWire, back when he was in Tout NL, right now he's in the AL, he bid aggressively on both Jose Fernandez and Tony Cingrani. And people, particularly with Fernandez, thought he was nuts. They thought, wow, you know, why would he bid so much of his money on a guy that, you know, well, yeah, he's been great, like in high A ball or wherever he was. You know, he just isn't proven, and he could be down in 2 weeks. But, you know, he looked at it like, well, the potential payoff on Fernandez and to a lesser degree Cingrani just isn't going to be there for anyone else. And I think that's the Bradley play. I think for Bradley that makes sense in and only. I think for Cahill, and particularly for, you know, David Buchanan, who went for, you know, 27, I just think that's kind of nuts. You know, Phil Hertz, he spent a combined 54 on Cahill and Buchanan, and I get the need, but when I'm spending that much, I kind of want the upside. I almost would have preferred what happened to Brian Walton. He wound up with Eric Stoltz and Jordan Lyles at a buck apiece. I don't like those guys either, but he spent $2 on them. If they don't work out, he can jettison them pretty easily.
Yeah, I think that's a really strong point on those guys. I mean, I personally like Cahill more than most, so I wouldn't lump him in with Buchanan, but yeah, a guy like Buchanan is in an NL only. You can get guys like that. I mean, even in a really deep league, it's not worth the additional funds to go out and spend on someone like that.
I just feel, you know, and Phil, and this happened. I'm not sure when he put his bids in, but he had Joaquin, you know, Benoit as well. And he handcuffed him with Kevin Quackenbush. So he spent a combined $21 on those guys in a 260 auction league. So he's already kind of got some holes, and it's just that problem. It's like I get when you have some bad luck coming out of the auction and you try to, you know, fill the holes. It's just that usually it seldom works out. you almost need to kind of reserve your fab in that situation and kind of pick your spots. And I mean, if he believes in Cale and Buchanan, and you're right, Brett, you know, Cale is not in the same class as Buchanan, but if he believes in those guys, I think that's fine. It's just that to go that high in his budget, he's already very limited.
God, I hate closers. God, I just hate them. Just the worst. Chasing saves always, like, it'll always bite you like that, though. Like, even if you're doing well, like, if you're racking up the saves, like, someone will bite you somehow, somewhere. Always.
It is very rare to have a whole season in a league where both your closers just, it's smooth sailing.
Yeah.
Oh, nothing goes wrong. It's something I miss. You know, I had Mariano Rivera for a couple of years in the league, and he was way overpriced, and I just didn't care because I was like, you know what? I just want the security. Like, I just don't even want to think about it. It's like, you know, it's like going to cash your, you know, General Motors stock or whatever every week. It's like I'm just getting my dividend.
Nice.
Exactly.
He's gonna blow a save. You know, he's gonna blow three or four saves all year. Yeah, I know, but he's Mariano. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So anyone else in the NL you wanted to touch on? Do you want to talk about the other guy you bet on?
I bet on a few people. What I did was I decided, as I mentioned before, to kind of reserve Wood. I actually had to cut Matzek, which was kind of rough because I kind of liked him as a streamer. But the other choices were to cut like guys like Addison Russell and Noah Syndergaard, which I don't want to do. Tout's a four-man reserve. I think those guys will, particularly Syndergaard, will contribute. So I kind of went with relievers. I put a bunch of relievers in the queue, but I got Antonio Bastardo as kind of just a $0 flyer. I got Jim Johnson for $5. This was before it was announced that Grilly would close, but I think Johnson could still get some saves. I was a little surprised that nobody bid more on Johnson. I thought somebody at the time, just because it was open-ended, might bid like 10. And I got Jeff Francoeur I bid $5, I got him for $1 because of Vickery, because it's an NL only. He will probably be on the bad side of a platoon, but I honestly, the things I've heard about Grady Sizemore and, you know, even looking at Odubel Herrera, I'm not necessarily sure that any of those guys are long for the lineup. And somebody on Twitter who, you know, we have a pet name for now, he did reference a serious story about Francoeur and the fact that he had battled depression last year. You know what I'm talking about. That he had battled depression last year and you know, is on, like, medication now and getting it treated. And that's something that could make a difference. I mean, I don't know if it will, but you know, it's just kind of one of those, like, food for thought things.
Yeah, I'm not... I'm not in on Grady Sizemore.
No, I mean, I'm not really in on Francoeur either. I'm just hoping that for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, or however long I have to have him, that he, you know, does a little bit here, a little bit there. I notice he usually has, like, that kind of shelf life where for a couple weeks he does a little something. And again, it's an only.
This is a somewhat serious question. What did you – is he an outfielder?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, not a really yes, he is. No, he's not. He's not a pitcher.
Okay.
Although it's funny you mention that because Tout has a swingman spot where you can put anyone in there. And, okay. You know, when it came to Travis Wood, I asked Peter Kreutzer, you know, who we've had on the show, if I could put Wood in as a hitter for the Colorado series. and he said no. He said the league actually has rules that you can't shift people back and forth. But I was like, you know, if I could put Wood in that swingman spot as a hitter – I do it because, you know, we know that the dude every once in a while, you know, can jack one out.
He'll run into a couple, yeah.
Yeah, he ain't bad. I mean, he's not Carlos Zambrano. He's not that good. But, yeah, he'll, as you said, he'll run into a couple.
Yeah. So any, I guess that's more or less it for the NL. Were there any guys in the AL that were interesting?
Well, you know, just to kind of balance things out, and this is the tough thing about this series, which is by the time you hear this, will have premiered. Because I'm not in the AL, or that no one from Baseball Prospectus is in any of the expert AL leagues, and if you're listening, I'm not angling for an invitation. I'm just saying this matter-of-factly. I don't really have a process there in terms of saying, well, we did this, we did that. Erasmo Ramirez, I guess, was kind of interesting. He went for 11. You know, he was traded, so he's somebody I think that you know some of the experts have always liked. You know, if you look at it, a lot of people, it looks like 10 teams bid at least a dollar on him. He went for 11. I guess in an only that's okay in an only as a spec play. I think I don't think that's particularly crazy.
Yeah, I want to talk about one guy on this list who I have affination for, even if I don't necessarily it was not I don't love the bid, I don't hate the bid, but Keone Kella is a really really interesting arm. His stuff has gotten better and better as he's been in pro ball, and this spring we had a couple members of the prospect team who got to see him, and he was just nasty, and looked like one of the best relievers on that team. And you know, he's definitely an interesting guy to track, and I think he's definitely worth owning in AL only. He went for $4 in Fab this week, and you know, part of that kind of has to be the saves play. But you know, on the other hand, Naftali Feliz does not look bad himself, and I don't think he is one of the more vulnerable closers in baseball, and there's really no reason to believe that Kella is going to be next if he goes down, since they, when healthy, they do have other, you know, half decent late inning guys ahead of them, like Tanner Shepherds has been okay in spurts, and Sean Tolson's done the same thing. He's definitely a guy to look at for a pure reliever spec play, though, in a really deep or AL only format, or even if it's a sort of medium sized mixed league, and he finds his way into getting holds, and you have that as a category, it might not be a bad idea to keep an eye on him.
Yeah, no, I think that he's one of those guys that's certainly interesting. You know, and we kind of alluded to this in terms of comparing the two expert leagues. He wasn't bid on at all in the Tout Wars AL. He's just out there still. And you know, this is where it kind of gets hard to compare. Like Erasmo actually went for $4 to Mike Potherzer of Fangraphs, and I think that's, you know, that's a really like slick bid on his part. Like that's just solid. But you know, then Zach McAllister, I'm guessing, wasn't available in labor. He went for $16 in Tout.
Yeah, that's a nice price on McAllister in AL only.
Yeah, well, and that's Vickery. So actually, it's funny. It looks like two teams bid 16 on him. So it was a tie, and I don't know how they broke the tie this week. But yeah, it's two teams being aggressive. So somebody had to pay the full freight.
Yeah, my hope is that it's settled by Joust.
Well, picturing who the participants are, I think I know who would win that.
Wow.
I don't know who was fighting over it, but I...
Well, now I can't say because, you know, I hope they don't listen because I'm going to get in all sorts of trouble.
Oh, yeah, you were just talking crap right there, Mike.
I know. I'm going to get beat up.
I would pay money to see fantasy baseball analysts from all across the internet joust American Gladiator style.
Well, Mike would win, right?
Well, I don't know about that. As we've talked about, there's some big dudes at these things.
Okay, well, big dudes, but are they athletic? Because you run.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Running doesn't help you when you joust, Mal. Does not help you at all.
I mean, you know, it takes some coordination to be able to run. I'm not sure.
It's balance.
I don't know.
It's all balance.
I'm starting to get into some dangerous territory here, so I'm just going to pump the brakes right now.
Sounds good. Well, why don't we take a break, and we'll come back and get into the topic section of the podcast.
Alrighty.
All right. welcome back to episode 49, Flags Fly Forever, Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. So now that we've done the Expert League Fab review, I think this is the best time of year to really go over sort of what our general philosophies are with Fab bidding early in the season, and sort of where our comfort level lies in terms of how much to spend, where to spend our money, how much to panic, et cetera. I guess we'll kind of break this out into a couple of different parts. Mike, the first question I have for you, and you know we talked about this a little bit with Denard Span in Labor Mixed, but more in general, when you have a player who is injured, who you're counting on for at least a reasonable amount, not an end game pick, you know, but not a superstar, a guy who you could reasonably replace off of the wire for a month or so. When do you choose to get aggressive with your bidding, and when do you decide to just kind of cobble together what you can until said player gets back?
Well, I think for one thing, if it's you're talking about a deeper league, because in say a 12 team mix, which I'm in one of those this year, it's an expert. I'm probably not getting aggressive unless it's a minor leaguer, like a big time minor leaguer that you didn't expect up, who's suddenly up. Like Byron Buxton might be an example. Like if he suddenly came up in a standard mixer, I might just go crazy for him just because of the upside. But in a deep mix, in an only, it probably right now, I guess the way I would look at it is if there's a big, I look at the other way, if there's a big injury. Like, so if you had someone you had an expectation of playing, like let's say as we're recording tonight, Ryan Braun has a strained ribcage. Let's say tomorrow morning, you know, heaven forbid if you're a Braun owner, that it turns out it's like announced to be a 3-month injury. That might be where I start to get aggressive and really look at it like, all right, I'm losing half a season of Braun. I'm really going to need somebody here to pick up the slack. Whereas I know if Braun's going to be out for, say, 2 weeks, particularly, you know, we're talking about the second day of the season or the third day of the season when you hear this. In standard leagues, not a lot has changed. Like, nothing's going to happen from a circumstantial standpoint that makes me think, oh yeah, like I really have to get this guy. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, it obviously it's all league size dependent, but when you have an injury to a player you're relying on it. It's easy to fall into the mindset of trying to find the most like player on the waiver wire and bidding heavily for that player's services, but early in the season you really shouldn't be concerned about stuff like that. If you have a power hitter who goes down is going to be out for 6 weeks. There's really no reason you need to replace him with a power hitter. You really should just be looking for best overall value. I mean, I know we talked about you trying to get some steals out of Jordan Schaefer while Denard Span is out, but that's really because that's where the best value fell. That we weren't, Mike, tell me if you disagree, but I mean, we were not seeking out stolen bases to seek out stolen bases. These are, you know, Young and Schaefer were the two guys who we thought could contribute the most value in a short term span, regardless of categorical contribution.
No, I agree. I mean, the one guy, again, we talked about this on the segment, but Michael Taylor was the guy that I kind of thought could be more valuable. He has a lot of potential, but because, and this goes again back to what I talked about, because it's not a long-term injury with Span, I don't think Taylor's going to put up those, you know, like 15, 20 numbers. I mean, that's even ambitious, but, you know, put up those big numbers like he put in the minors.
Yeah, he's got a lot of, he's got a lot of development, I think, left to do. He's got an exciting profile, but, But in the short term, if you're looking at a player like that, I mean, there's big boom or bust potential. And you know, personally for me, I like to bid on players who could extend their useful life beyond when your own player is out, which is why I usually don't specifically target a player who is filling in for the player that that is hurt on my team, just because, you know, if Schaefer ends up stealing, you know, 7 or 8 bases in the first 4 weeks of the season and is hitting, you know, 250, which is, it's possible. I mean, I think that's very much on the high end for him, but maybe he's not the guy that we drop when Spen gets healthy. Maybe it's a different member. Maybe we finally become vegetarians. I don't know, but it's definitely a specific thing, and this kind of goes into the next question that I have. And Mal, I'll throw this out to you first. How different of a philosophy do you have on fab bidding when you are in a league that allows for $0 bids versus one that doesn't allow for $0 bids?
I get a lot less aggressive when there are no $0 bids. You know, we were talking about this a little bit earlier in the previous segment before the break, that but basically, when you don't have $0 bids and there's no waiver wire process where you can acquire players when injuries kind of take their hold, or let's say the middle of the season, like you're just running out of players and you need to fill some spots, like, and you're out there without any fab money, and you need guys, but you already blew it already. That's not an enviable position. So, like, when there are no $0 bids, I tend to get a little bit more I get a lot more conservative with my spending, and I start to really count my dollars. But, you know, in cases where there are $0 bids and I feel comfortable with, you know, the prices that I'm throwing out there fab-wise, I'm more willing to kind of let my money go freely. But, you know, it's a tough position with no $0 bids. I hate those leagues. I played in those leagues, and I've been out of money and needing an extra, like, 2 pitchers, and I've just not been able to pick them up. So it's I'm not about it.
Yeah, I did have a league that I won. It was an AL league a couple of years ago where I did run out of money fairly early, but it was also a case where I was right before the trade deadline that happened. I had some guys on reserve that I knew were coming back, and it was very strategic. So there are very rare cases that you might want to do that. But yeah, Mao is generally right. You don't want to put yourself in that position where you're out of money.
So I guess to follow up on that question, if you had to break it out into sort of the first $50 you spend and the second $50 you spend, how much more careful are you on the first $50 in fab that you spend? Or do you really just start to think about it more as you get into the second half of your budget?
If there are $0 bids, the first $50 I spend tends to go pretty quick, because depending on what my strategy is heading in, I'll chase saves, or I'll try to go and ride the hot hand. Like, I'll try to pick up a Charlie Blackman and get really aggressive with my bidding. I probably would have dropped $40 on Archie Bradley, you know, in an only league. When there are no $0 bids and I have to put a dollar on everybody, that's when I really have to start. I get more aggressive in the second half of my $50 than I do with my first. So I kind of flip it. I might not even get to the second. I might not get to the second 50 until like August, you know. But then after that, it's just I'm off to the races with my final $50.
Mike, what about you?
I tend to spend a little bit more early. You know, some of it is need dependent. If you have a strong team, you don't tend to spend that money because you don't need to, or you don't even want to stash guys on reserve. But it's kind of a use it or lose it. If I have a hole and I see somebody who can, you know, fix it or help me with the need, I'm not going to hold back. I know that chances are good, quite honestly, that if you have to run through most of your fab by July, that you're probably not going to win anyway, but you might as well try. it just doesn't make sense to be, you know, I've been in the other position where you're there in September with, say, like $30 left. And if you're not in first place, you probably made a mistake. So it's usually a mix. I don't want to blow through too much because a lot can happen. But I think, like you, Mal, I tend to, say, spend a fourth of it by the end of May or a third of it by the end of May at the latest.
Yeah, I tend to be pretty hyper aggressive with my fab in leagues where you're allowed $0 bids. I even tend to get pretty aggressive in leagues where you don't. But I will. You know, it really all depends on auction philosophy too, because I'll even in drafts, even in auctions where I'm not targeting a Stars and Scrubs type of strategy, I usually will still end up with a number of back end guys that I will try to kind of churn through over the first part of the season to see who sticks, especially if it's a league where you can stash players on the DL. I'll just start rolling through guys pretty rapidly. You know, things obviously change when you factor in keeper formats as well, as you know, you kind of have to be if they're you know, keeper formats where keeper price is dependent on the fab bid. I mean, that obviously takes a good amount into account. But if it's not, then you start to see some pretty crazy bids, and I'll certainly throw them out myself. I mean, I'm in a Mal, you're in this league too, but I'm in a league that's it's a 16 team dynasty format that uses fab bidding, and I bid almost $70 on Hector Oliveira in the first week. Now, I make the argument that there's not going to be anyone with his talent level available on the waiver wire the entire year. So I certainly don't mind spending that level of cash, especially in a league with $0 bids. But it's all about being aggressive for the right players, and the more players you keep, and the less correlation there is between fab bids and the ability to keep those players long term, then you start getting into really high bids, and I very much recommend making selective high bids, just because that's the best way to improve your team.
Yep. That was a very that was a very surprising number to wake up to in the email, but it makes sense, I guess.
I didn't see the email, but
the $70 bid in Oliveira. That was.
I thought you were talking about a separate number. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's that is aggressive, but I think for the format, it makes sense.
Yeah. I could bid $1 on him or $100 on him, and I'd still just be able to keep him without
right.
Without salary implication. I have a little bit of an interesting strategy in that league that I kind of fell into in the draft. So my 2015 team is not very strong, but trying something fun.
That's the league to have fun in, though. Like, you know, just whatever. It's a fun league.
It is a fun league. So I guess the next question I have is we'll talk about closers a little bit, just because there's always that guy the first week of the year because someone got hurt or someone was really ineffective in spring, and there was a surprise name in the closer ring in between auction time and the start of the season. But how I guess there have been plenty of stories of guys who, you know, were big bids that were potential closers at the beginning of seasons that, that worked out spectacularly terribly, and some that worked out really well. So what, Mike, what do you look for in a potential closer on the waiver wire that, that makes you more comfortable in investing in him?
Well, I think I've said this before, but the thing I skills are a big thing, and it's kind of very general, and it comes across a catch-all. But the two things I don't want to see in this order are a guy that walks a lot of people and a guy that gives up a lot of home runs. Because I think a manager will forgive, and I think I told this a few weeks ago, a manager will forgive hits, you know, if it's like three hits, even if they're hard hit balls. But if a guy's walking like six batters per nine, I don't think it matters. Like I know that Chris Hatcher, who got the save today for the Dodgers, and a lot of people are rushing to pick up. I don't know if I necessarily would do that unless it was, you know, an only league, because I just still don't necessarily trust the walk profile, and maybe that's something that is getting better or did get better this spring. But that's one of those things I'm looking at. You know, as far as a closer, and he had a good outing in his first game, I'm a little bit nervous about Trevor Rosenthal because of that and what happened with him last year. So that's kind of what I'm looking for. I mean, obviously strikeouts are great. I prefer a pitcher with, you know, 12 strikeouts per nine to like six or seven. But if the manager's going with a guy who like strikes out seven or eight per nine, who doesn't walk a lot of guys and doesn't give up the home runs, I'm okay with that too.
Yeah, I think the walk thing is a really, really important point, and I firmly believe in that as well. As a guy who's trying to break into a closer role, you don't. Mike's absolutely right. You don't earn your manager's trust by walking, you know, four and a half batters per nine. It makes it really tough to succeed that way, and there have been no shortage of potential closers that have flamed out because they just didn't throw enough strikes. The home run thing, I think, is also important. That tends to be a little bit flukier in the short term, though. But so I think it's certainly worth paying attention to. But I tend to, unless there's a long track record of a pitcher giving up a lot of home runs, I wouldn't be as concerned about that.
Right. Right, right. I mean, it's you know, picking up closers on the waiver wire requires a lot of alchemy. And Mike, you listed off a lot of traits, and it's about that complicated. I mean, sometimes it becomes very obvious. Like, you know, Familia is probably you know going to be the dude to pick it up for Mejia, maybe, but maybe Carlisle's out there as well. So I mean, it's, I don't know, man. I wrote about this all last year. I'm starting to have flashbacks. So
having some non flashbacks.
I am. I'm getting the 1,000-yard stare right now.
Hey Matt, how you doing? I don't know if Matt Collins listens. He has a closer report this year, so you know, send all questions about relievers to him, as many as you possibly can.
I am jumping into his comments every single article.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually going to be up
tomorrow.
Listen to this. It's going to be up. New version of the report.
He is Red Sox Thoughts on Twitter. That's Red Sox _thoughts.
Yes, please ask him about closers.
Go to Matt for all of your closer and weather needs.
If you ask me about closers, I'm going to send you photos of palm trees.
So is there anything else you guys want to talk about from a fab standpoint before we move on?
No, I think that was it.
No, I mean I could give a lot of general fab advice, but I think that a lot of it is just knowing your league and kind of playing it that way. It's like a lot of things in season that makes it kind of complicated. We can give general advice, but there's just things that play out differently in every league.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely know whether your league, you know, goes heavy on potential closers off the waiver wire, whether they don't, whether once you've played in a league for two or three years, you tend to know the patterns of some of the owners, so you can you get to the point where you can guess as to what some people's next steps are, and that's honestly that's when you're most successful in FAB, is when you can anticipate the moves of other league members, just like if you were sitting at a poker table. So yeah, I don't really have anything else either. So what we're going to do to close out the episode is, since today is opening day, we're going to do a little opening day themed Q&A. I am going to pick a player who had an interesting opening day, and I'm going to ask a question about him. And we're going to answer it, and it's going to be fun, and a good time is going to be had by all. So we're going to start in LA. Jimmy Rollins had a stolen base and a home run today. Went 2 for 4 in their first game. Rollins had kind of a surprisingly good season last year, and before the trade, I don't think anyone thought he was going to come close to repeating it. I think there was a little bit more optimism in LA as opposed to Philadelphia, but not a ton. So, Mike, since you're a resident Philadelphia expert, would you expect him to finish with the with more than 30 combined home runs and steals this year?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty safe bet. You know, the thing about Rollins, and particularly in the steal department, he's a smart base runner. He doesn't really have the speed that he once had. I think the thing with Rollins, and this was true with Chase Utley when he was here, when Davey Lopes was coaching here, he taught those guys how to run. Because Lopes, if you go back and look at his career via Baseball Reference, he was that kind of base runner. I mean, he was fast, but he wasn't blazing fast, particularly after his first couple of years. But he just knew when to take the base. So I think with the steals alone, to guess like 15 to 20 for Rollins, that's a pretty safe estimate. So, 10 to 12 home runs, maybe a little bit more than that. I actually see him slipping a little bit this year. But he's in good shape. He's in good condition for someone who's 36. I don't have a big problem with him getting there.
Sounds good. Mal, you have any thoughts on Rollins?
No,
do
I mean,
you disagree.
I would agree. I would actually probably put him probably about 35 combined home runs and stolen bases. I think he bust out a 20 and 15 year. Yeah, Davey Lopes had some really stupid, crazy stolen base numbers. Like some 40-0 stuff, but I've really grown to appreciate Rollins as a player as time has gone on, and I really hope he rocks out in LA. It's probably one of my favorite players in baseball.
Really, I did not know that about you.
Yeah, I'm a big Rollins guy.
Cool.
So let's move on to a player who's even older than Jimmy Rollins. One of the surprise starting pitchers on opening day was Bartolo Colon, who held a depleted Nationals lineup in check for 6 innings and surprisingly struck out 8 batters. Although when the lineup you're facing includes Dan Uggla and Tyler Moore, I don't know if that really counts. What's over or under on Bartolo Colon finishing the season as a top 60 starting pitcher? Mike,
what's the rank at top what?
60.
You're talking mixed or both?
Yeah. Yeah.
20%, 25%. I just think at his age, he's done it before. He did it 2 years ago. I just think at his age, it's going to be kind of tough for him to get there.
Now,
I am going to go 10%, and I love Bartolo Colon. I love Bartolo Colon at bats, and I think he's a very entertaining player. But like, I look at that guy, and then I look at the age number, and I can't do that in good conscience. I can't predict that. I can't go with it. I can't go with Bartolo Colon being a top 60 pitcher at the end of the year. And I love him. I love him.
Me neither. And he's really fun to watch. He's fun to watch on the mound and at the plate. Since he's gotten to New York, he's just one of those guys that is an absolute joy to watch. There's no question about it. But yeah, to expect him to hold up over a full season is expecting way too much. The other player, I believe he was the only other player on opening day to homer and steal in the same game, was Alex Rios, who went 3-for-4 in his Royals debut. How do you feel about Rios as a fantasy comeback player this year? And do you think he can sneak into relevancy in every format?
I guess the answer to those questions are I feel somewhat good. And yes, I think that Rios should bounce back somewhat in the power department. And I thought that before he hit the home run today. I could see him hitting like 10 to 12 home runs. He still runs. I think he could still do that. He loses Texas, which is a bit of a disadvantage for him, but he should be fine overall. As far as him in all formats, yeah, I think there's enough freight there with the steals that even if he does hit the 10 home runs, he could be a standard mix guy.
All right. Mal, any different thoughts?
No, I mean, it's kind of weird, right? Because like he did hit 280 last year, but he had like zero power, and he did it in what? I mean, he did it across two teams, I was looking at the wrong column. He did it in 130. Yeah, I mean, he hit 280 like all year.
If it makes you feel any better, I said Texas, and then because it's late, we're recording, I just had to go back and look and make sure that. You know, I'm like, Texas? Yeah. Like, it wasn't the White Sox? Like, dude, that was, like, you know, 2013. I'm starting to fade here a little bit.
Yeah, no. Yeah, those two columns definitely ran together.
That's what it was. I think we're looking at the same BREF page.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. But, I mean, he hit 280 and, I mean, zero power. You know, still stole almost 20 bases. So, like, if him hitting 280 with, like, 10 to 15 home runs and 10 to 15 stolen bases is a bounce back, then yeah, I mean, that's where I'm going with it. But
well, you know what it is? I think that he had a couple years there where he was an unheralded fantasy monster. And that sounds like it's saying a lot, but he cracked 30 in AL only for 2 years running. I think he joined like Robbie Cano and then the obvious guys like Mike Trout and a couple other people. And so last year by that standard was viewed as a disappointment, particularly in the power department. But a bounce back is going to put him back into that, you know, stratosphere. But a bounce back kind of can put him into like the high teens, low 20s and only. And a mix, I think, that can put him into like the $10 to $12 range. And yeah, if he can do that, that kind of puts him in that okay category. And, you know, the other side of that is his OPS, his real life numbers are just kind of where you're like, whatever, but
right. It's
more about the fantasy proposition with him. Now, if you're in an on-base percentage league, it's a whole other story.
Yeah, he stole 42 bases in 2013, and then, stole 17 last year. So it's, you know, there's a bounce back in there. I think he's got the talent to hit those upper teen projections for sure.
Yeah. All right, so for the sake of for us and our listeners, we'll make these last couple of questions very, very quick hit. Mike Moustakas had a really, really nice first day of the season today. Over under on 19.5 home runs for Moustakas this year. Mike?
I'm still going with the under. Maybe it'll be closer than it's been in the past, but I just don't see a 20 home run season out of him.
Mal?
He's trying to bring me back into his trap by going opposite field for his, you know, for the first time in his career, but I'm still going under.
Sounds good. Jason Grilly looked really good in his first save opportunity today. Over under 25.5 saves for Grilly this year.
I'm going to go under because I think there's some competition in that bullpen, and I don't know if he's going to be able to do it all year enough to accrue 25.5.
Yeah, I'll go under just because I think there's enough things that could happen to a bottom half closer that I'm not saying it can't get there, but if I had to place the bet, I'm going to go under.
Sounds good. Mookie Betts, over under on hitting 500 for the season?
Over. He's hitting 750.
Yeah. Real Red Sox related question. Hanley Ramirez, what percentage chance do you put on him being the number two shortstop for fantasy this year? Or higher? Mike?
Oh, 35%. I think there's a real shot. You know, I think the thing with Hanley, and we kind of saw this, for him to get there, it's a weird thing. You know, with Troy Tulowitzki, we know it's just the health. Tulo had one bad year out of five when he was on the field. Every other year, he's great on the field, but he misses significant time. Hanley's weird in that last year he was on the field and was good, but not great. And then 2 years ago, he was amazing when he was on the field, but he didn't play a lot. He needs both, or he needs enough of both to get there. And that's the thing. He could do it, which is what I say, 30 or 35?
He said 35.
Yeah, I think 30 or 35 is about right. I'll go 35. I think there's a shot, you know, because you got the guys ahead of him, you know, aren't necessarily like ironclad. And, you know, we have Tulo and Ian Desmond and in labor, and I think still maintain they'll both be better, but that doesn't mean Hanley can't get there.
I'm just going to go ahead and get aggressive and put a coin flip on it. I'm going to say 50%. I think that when you talk about Tulowitzki, like you said, Mike, it's about the health, and I think there's a pretty good shot that Hanley Ramirez outproduces Ian Desmond from an offensive standpoint. So I'm just going to go really high. I'm going to go 50.
All right. Next guy up. There was certainly an offensive explosion with the Rockies today. We don't need to talk about a lot of those guys, but one guy who I do want to talk about is Corey Dickerson, who got off to a nice start with a home run and four RBIs. Over or under in Dickerson, 26.5 home runs.
Ooh, that's a good over under. I'm gonna go under. I'm gonna go under, but just slightly.
Mike?
Same thing. My guess in my head when you asked the question was 23. You know, the funny thing about Dickerson, I don't hate him by any means, but I feel like a Charlie Blackman who just gets maligned for tailing off in the second half. Dickerson did the same thing to a lesser extent. And, you know, Coors is Coors. It'll play. But I could see the split with Dickerson being more radical this year between the home and the road. So I'm going to go a little bit under.
All right. Let's move back to the East Coast for one last one. Masahiro Tanaka did not look so great in his season debut today. Two-part question. One, over under on 18.5 starts for Tanaka this year. And two, a lot less of a numbers question, but do we think that if he stays healthy for the entire season, he is a top 30 pitcher, given what he's been saying in the media and given how he's looked so far this spring in the first outing?
Okay, well, for the first question, I'm rooting for over 18.5. I'm going to say over 18.5, but I think he's probably in the 20 to 25 range. And for the second question, if he's healthy all year, then I do think he's a top 30 starting pitcher. I don't think he's going to be healthy all year.
What's the first question that we're answering? Could you just phrase that? Because I know the answer to the second
question. Do you think he makes 20 starts?
No, I don't think he gets there. I'm going to guess he makes like 15 is kind of the mid-range. I'm thinking 12 to 18. And to answer the second question, I think if he's healthy, there's no way he gets into that echelon of pitchers. The upside for me is maybe as like a number three in terms of the numbers if he pitches all year, and I think that might be generous. Brett, I think we talked about this a little bit before the show. I just look at Tanaka, and it's not just what he did today. It's the fact he's already making adjustments based on the way he feels. That's never really a good sign, particularly for someone who hasn't had the surgery. Pitchers that had the Tommy John that say they're adjusting, it's usually because of how they feel and, you know, their arm feels weird. You know, Masahiro Tanaka, if his arm feels weird and he's adjusting, it's because he has a tear, and maybe he's the lucky one that doesn't need to get it fixed. But historically speaking, the odds are good that he will.
Yeah, I don't like where this is going with Tanaka. If he stays healthy for the whole season, I don't think he cracks the top 30. I think the best thing for, I mean, obviously not if you own him in a redraft, but if you own him long term anywhere, or if you're the Yankees, I mean, you tell him to go balls out, and then when he breaks, you get him back, you know, a year and a month, year and 2 months later, and hopefully he's back to being the guy that he was in the first half last year. But him being the Yankees getting six more years of the guy who he looks like now, the guy who's just trying to avoid arm surgery, is looks like a really, really poor investment, both for the Yankees and for what people paid for him in fantasy leagues. So that's pretty much it for our game here. So we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and wrap things up. We are back. Thank you for listening to episode 49, Flags Fly Forever. We have been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I am Brett Sayer. You've been listening to Mike Gianella and Mauricio Rubio. We will be back next week. And in the meantime, read all of us at baseballprospectus.com. Go subscribe today. You get a premium membership. You get everything that we put out as a fantasy team, all of our prospect content, all of our general great baseball content. And if you sign up for a super premium membership, you get access to the Bat Signal, which is our fantasy answering service. You have a question for us, send it in, and one of us will answer it in approximately 12 hours. Other than that, we is business as usual around here. So hope everyone does well their first weeks of the fantasy season, and we will see you back here next week. All right, bye bye.
Bye.
See you.